This is Kat.
And Nat from the Mom Truth Podcast.
Does your little one love Paw Patrol?
What about dinosaurs?
Well, the new season of Paw Patrol is here, and guess what?
It's a dino rescue. I can't wait for my kid to watch each episode 10 times a night.
All of your holiday and birthday gift shopping is pretty much done because, of course, there are a whole new batch of dino rescue toys. And for a limited time at Target, get 15% off the new Paw Patrol dino rescue toys with the code PAW15. Check it out. It's gonna be possum.
And a guest said to me recently, and it really hit home because I know this, that family don't call love L-O-V-E, they call it T-I-M-E.
That's so true.
And I thought, yeah, all right. The genie show, oh, our lonely days are gone. It's magic, I know. I think it will be fun. Come on, hello. Like we knew all along, it's time to party. The genie show.
Mr. David Ralph, welcome to the Genie Show.
It is so lovely to be here. It really is. I'm sitting here in a pool of sweat, basically, because I've just dragged myself through New York City, through the madness, the homelessness. It's all going on, and it's multi-leveled, isn't it? You see the sort of rich people walking past the homeless people, and the homeless people going past the sports people and stuff. I found it a little bit shocking this morning.
It is a little bonkers, and we were talking about this on the way in as well. You've been to New York a number of times now. I have come across the years and I live here now, so I think I'm unfortunately getting immune to some of it. It's just becoming something that I take for granted, which I'm trying not to let happen, but it happens. But tell me, like, how are you finding being in the energy of this crazy city?
We have been on a road trip for 4 weeks, right. Well, nearly 5 weeks now. We spent 3 days here back in the day, whenever it was, and then we've been driving through New York State. And after 3 days, I was physically exhausted. I really was. I was exhausted by the Metro card. I was exhausted by knowing should I be on the PATH or the NJ Transit. And it's a lot more complicated than London. And one of the things that screwed me up big time was Billy Joel. Now, Billy Joel had that song, Uptown Girl, yeah, you know. And so I assumed that Uptown was the nice area.
Right, right.
And it's not. And so if you get onto the tube and you think, right, I'm going to end up with the posh people, yeah, and you get off at Uptown, no, you've got to get on and come to downtown. So what Billy Joel was talking about, I've got no idea.
Right.
And so, yeah, with the E's and the oranges and stuff, it's complicated. It really is complicated. Yeah. And it doesn't help that you've got these three little islands sort of like next to each other as well. So I'm easing into it now.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So gotcha. I feel like I'm more a tourist, but gotcha, still a tourist with sweat patches.
It's generally the case here too, I find, with the humidity. Like, you leave the house and you're covered in sweat patches and you have to have like a bathroom pat down before you go to your meetings. David, we're here to talk about you and what cultivates happiness for you personally. So I've got a series of questions I'd love to ask
you. You go for it, whatever you want to ask.
So, you know, you've been an entrepreneur and we've talked a lot about this off air. I'd love to talk about it more in detail here. So tell me, you've kind of been working for yourself for 6 years. Prior to that, you know, you said that you went through a bit of a journey to get through where you are now. And one of the things I took away from our last conversation together is you said that you have some hard and fast rules, but you have a stop time.
Yes.
And you have a break time.
Yes.
So tell me how you got to those non-negotiable stages in your routine.
It's funny. When I was in corporate land, I had those rules. I used to work long hours, and right, then when my last two kids came, so I had three kids, and I really didn't see them very much, and I was in that mindset of, I'm doing it for you, but Dad has to go to work, you know. And then I realized that actually they never asked for any of the stuff. They wanted me to be there.
Of course.
And a guest said to me recently, and it really hit home because I know this, that family don't call love L-O-V-E, they call it T-I-M-E.
That's so true.
And I thought, yeah, all right. So when my last two came along, I then become non-negotiable. And I was in the office at 8 o'clock in the morning. I was out at 4. And whatever needed to be done, if it wasn't done within those hours, it was waiting. Bang. Now, when I became an entrepreneur, that went out the window.
Yeah.
And I was getting up really early in the morning. And there's that badge of honor that you hear time and time again. Oh, I work 22 hours a day and I don't need any sleep. And the last time I've eaten was 1988. And you kind of buy into that.
Yeah.
And I don't know why we do buy into that, because it's just rubbish. But I bought into it. And so I was doing really long hours. And I got to a point where people were saying to me, David, you look crap. And I was thinking, do I? you know, because I didn't see it. And it was like a gradual sucking away of the energy, you know.
Right.
That was my first wake-up call. When somebody said that, I should have woken up. When I thought, what? If people are saying I look rubbish, then surely I should do something about it. But I didn't. I just thought, if I work even harder, I'd be able to get to the promised land. I'd be able to get to the freedom that I want. And so that's what I did. And I literally, for about 3 years, I was working maybe 22 hours a day. Because my podcast, when you podcast, you start off, as you know, thinking, this would be fun.
Yeah.
I'll rock up and I'll turn the microphone on and I have these conversations.
And off you go.
And off you go. But you don't realise you've got the editing, you've got the production, you've got the post-production, you've got the marketing, you've got all those kind of stuff. And I was doing that all myself.
Yeah.
And so when I suddenly had a breakdown, that was when those rules came back in. And I had a breakdown, not mentally, but physically, my body just started to give way and I started to break out in things and my hair started dropping out. And I thought, God, this isn't good. I've got to go to the doctor. And the doctor quite simply said, duh, what do you think? You know,
right.
If you're working these kind of hours, what's going to give? It's going to, your body's going to give. And so that's when I pulled those back. And so now I start off at 9 o'clock in the morning and then I finish by 3. I don't work any longer than that. How I do it is Monday, Tuesday and Wednesday. Wednesday is kind of negotiable playtime, but Monday and Tuesdays is not negotiable. That is me, when I say work, being with the family.
Right.
Being there with them, picking my kids up from school. And then Wednesday is my kind of preparation for my podcast day. Podcast day is Thursday. Friday is my coaching day. And then that's it done.
Right.
And if somebody comes along to me and they say, David, I can offer you squillion pound, but you've got to do it on a Tuesday, not happening, right. You know, absolutely not happening, because money's not important, you know, and time and health is. And once you decide on that, everything becomes easy. You know, once you make that decision of I'm going to do this, the world actually starts to accept it and it becomes your badge of honour. And I've always never had a mobile phone. You know, getting here today, I had to borrow my son and say to him, will you do it? So I've got no mobile phone. I've got no laptop. I've got nothing. Once I walk away from my office where I work, I'm disconnected. And people say, well, how do you do this? And what I realised was, you do it because you, by having all those devices, actually what you're doing is making it easier for other people's lives, not yourself.
Right.
And once you disconnect from that, if people really want you, they fit into it. And if they just want you because it's convenient for them, it's not going to happen. And so all the rubbish again disappears. And by limiting your access to the world, the cream comes to the top. And it's been a right eye-opener for me now.
Yeah.
So I can switch off for 5 weeks, and then I know when I go back, I'm going to open the doors again. The clients are waiting for me. And then I'm going to go again for probably 4 weeks, do it again. All decision-making. A long answer.
Yeah.
I'm not known for my brevity, but if you want to make something happen, all you've got to do is decide on it. And then you make those decisions and it happens.
There's so many gems that you dropped there. So I'm just going to pick up on a couple that really kind of resonated with me. I love the fact that you said that being constantly connected, like having a mobile device or a cell phone device, as they call it here in the United States, when you have those mobile devices, you're constantly connected and you are making it easier for other people and not yourself, because the inability to disengage becomes very difficult.
Yes.
And I love the fact that you have a designated space in your home that is, you know, as soon as you walk in, you're in work mode. As soon as you leave, you don't have to, you can close the door and literally wait till the next day till you enter. Was that something that you did intentionally? Did you create that space intentionally, or was it starting off with circumstance and you created it?
Yeah, it was a bit circumstance. I knew that when I started my podcast, it was going to be my thing. I went all in. So for the first year, I did 365-hour-plus episodes.
Wow.
All myself, all the editing, everything was all done myself. And I knew that in a family of five that I've got, with people banging on the door going, I need to go to the toilet, and, you know, and it just becomes very, very difficult to say to a house, I need you to be quiet for an hour, you know.
Yeah.
So at the beginning of my show, it says live from the back of his garden in the UK. And it's true. I actually walk up to a brick-built recording studio, very much like this, that I had built specially. I spent more on the building than anything else. And it's got a kitchen in there. It's got heating. It's got air conditioning. It's got all the sort of just like this, really. And I go to work. Even though it's 15 steps and I can get back if I bounce nine steps, you know, it's a place and no one bothers me. No one comes up there. The kids know that when I'm in there, I'm at work. And then when I come out, it's a free-for-all, you know, and I just say, you have me. But it's a real funny thing that my kids, we've been on this road trip. It's been brilliant. And I've been getting up early every morning because I do. And I've got no devices.
Yeah.
And so I've been sitting thinking. And I've just been sitting on the veranda outside hotels, looking at fields, looking at mountains. And the kids have been saying, what have you been doing? And I go, just thinking. And they go, well, yeah, but what are you thinking about? Just stuff.
Wow.
It's just stuff.
And who says that nowadays, right?
Nobody says that.
Nobody has time to think or makes the time to think.
Nobody has time to think. But every time I do this, when I disconnect and I go away for weeks at a time, my business, profit-wise, trebles. Or at least doubles because I suddenly have the breathing space to think, I should be doing that.
Yeah.
This is what I should be doing. So I've already got my plan for when I go back that will allow me to earn, fingers crossed, exponentially more than I'm earning, but have less live clients as well because I never got into it to be a coach, but I kind of like it.
Yeah.
And it's a fun thing to do, but you're restricted to their time.
Yeah.
And so when you say, yeah, I'll be there at 10 o'clock, you've got to be there at 10 o'clock. And I've realized that I'm energized by that ability to be liberated by my time and my space and my position in the world.
Yeah.
And so the fact that I'm sitting there at 6 o'clock in the morning, looking out at mountains and deer running around and stuff, just allowing those ideas to come into your mind, it's so powerful. And if you think of all the great inventions, when people are laying in the bath and they go, Eureka! Or they're sitting under a tree and an apple hits them on the head, nobody ever says that great invention was started when they had a laptop on there and phones and emails. Nothing ever occurs.
Yeah.
But we kind of think that that's the way to operate. And I'm saying to the world, I'm going to be your poster boy. I'm going to show you there's a different way of operating.
Yeah.
And you can have your cake and eat it. You can have the life that you want. And if people don't like it, then they're not your people.
Yeah.
Just let them go and then spend time with Ginny and everything is good in the world.
I love that. I've read posts about this and some information. Like Bill Gates has like 1 or 2 weeks of thinking time a year.
Yeah.
And that does obviously attribute to his success. And you're talking about this too, actually having that thinking time and disconnecting. That's where the ideas are born from.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, there's so many things you touched on. One thing that stood out to me in your previous answer was how family equates L-O-V-E and it's through T-I-M-E. So I think nowadays, because of this ability to earn money on the internet and to you know, grow a business where you're not actually there physically all the time, one of the things that I find is a lot of people feel that they sacrifice time for money a lot. And I feel that no matter what you do with your money, you know, you can put it in a bank, there is some guaranteed ROI. Mm. But with time, there's no ROI because one day it will run out.
Yes.
And at the start of the day, you have all these hours in your bank. At the end of the day, whether you've chosen to spend it or not, it's spent. Mm. That's it. It's done. So I like the way that you're really putting time on a pedestal.
That frightens me when you say that.
Yeah.
Because even though I know it's true, when somebody else says it, you think, oh my God, it's really true.
It is really true.
And I could walk out here, get hit by a bus, and so all those clients and all that thing I was rushing around for when I could have made time for my daughter's 5-year-old birthday party or something, you know, what's the point?
Exactly. Yeah. That's why I think time is such a valuable investment and the most valuable investment. Speaking of time, tell me, David, how do you prepare for your day? What do you do to start your day?
I get up. You know, it's as simple as that. Yeah. I'm not one of these people that go, oh, yeah, I go to bed the night before and I write a list.
Yeah.
I don't have any lists.
Yeah.
I just get up and I do what needs to be done.
Right.
But I'm very structured.
Right.
So as I say, on a Thursday is my podcasting day. So nothing else. I don't do anything else other than podcasting. I do about 8 episodes. That's about 2 months worth. Bang, 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 bang. And then that gives me breathing space. On other days, so I batch really well. On a Sunday morning, I will check my emails and I do it once a week. And I used to do it all the time. And I've seen yours. It says I only check it between 5 and, you know, and I think to myself, that's great. But why not go once a week? You know, because you tell the people out there that I'm doing it once a week and nobody argues. And what I've found is you get less chase up emails because people normally will send you an email, and if they haven't got a response within, you know, a day or two, they just send another one saying, oh, I'm just chasing up. Hopefully you saw it. But by saying to them, you know, I'm checking it once a month or once a week or something, nobody does that. So my emails went down less and less and less. And it gave me the ability to just go, read, deal, instead of going, oh, I'll deal with that later, you know. And we all do that kind of just, we read it, leave it there in the inbox, and then we come back to it. But I don't. I just go, boom, and I spend about an hour and I bash it all through. I use Vocaroo and Voice Spice. So if a listener has dropped me a line, I actually record a voice message, put a link into an email, send it to them, and they click on it. Saves me so much time.
Yeah.
But they love it because it's the podcast host actually sending the voice back, you know.
Yeah.
So I do a lot of those kind of things, and I don't deviate. You know, if that's my time for doing it on a Sunday morning, that's the time. And I won't look at it at any other time. But you've got to set out your stalls. And so, you know, we're on this trip at the moment, and you will get an email response that says, I will check it mid-September.
Yeah.
And that's fine.
Yeah.
You know, that's just it. So all those kind of things, it's just making sure that it's not a priority of what I need to do. It's more about what you don't do. And so when I wake up in the morning and I say quite flippantly, how do I start my day? I get up. It is, but I get up knowing what I'm not going to do. And I read this brilliant book called Essentialism.
Essentialism.
Right. And it was a game changer. And it's, I'm into things, and I will go into things like minimalism. And I go, oh, I'm a minimalist, and I'm going to get rid of everything. And then I look at it and think, well, actually, no, it's too much. You know,
yeah.
I'm not quite a minimalist. And this guy came along. I can't think what his name is, but it's Essentialism, the disciplined pursuit of doing less. And what he says is basically, by doing less, you get the breathing space to do better. And by doing better, your results come. And so I read this book and I thought, oh, this is brilliant. And so I read it again and I read it three times. And the only time I've ever done that with a book was the 4-Hour Work Week.
Yeah.
Many years ago when I read that at work and I thought, this is it. And I remember page 44 of the 4-Hour Work Week, I read it and the energy went away from me because I knew I was going to resign the next day. I knew I couldn't go a step further.
Wow.
If you read 44 of the 4-Hour Work Week, because I had to read it again, because I kept on saying to people, yeah, page 44. And they started saying to me, what is that? And I was thinking, I can't remember. And so I had to read it. And basically Tim Ferriss was saying, you know, if you work 8 hours a day and you work so many times a week, that means that for the next 50 years, you're spending 35 years at work doing stuff that you don't like. And it was that kind of vibe.
Wow.
And so you
that
kind of look, yeah,
right?
You look at it and you think, I don't actually want to be doing this for 35 years.
Yeah.
I don't actually really like it at the moment.
Yeah.
So why the hell am I doing this? And so I went in the next day and said, I'm resigning, you know, and I just walked away. My family panicked, my parents panicked, you know, because I had 5 kids. It wasn't a single person's life. It was a huge responsibility. But this Essentialism book, he basically says, you've got to go through your life and you've got to decide on what is most important and have that as your essential. And everything works around that. So imagine you and your partner would like to spend more time together.
Right.
But she's doing this and you're doing this and stuff. And so you look at it and you go, no, actually, that's really important to me.
Yeah.
That's more essential than doing this other thing and doing whatever, you know. That is what I'm going to build in. And if you get maybe 3 or 4 really essential things, because mine is now family.
Yeah.
Travel. I'm energized by movement. I've realized that every morning when I pack my bag and I get into the car and I say, kids, right, we're driving to somewhere, and it's something new, and you know, that makes me come alive.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So family, travel, money. I love earning money. I don't like spending money, but I like that Scrooge McDuck feeling of swimming around in it. You know, dive into the vault and swim around in your money. And I like that ability because then that gives me my big one of thinking.
Thinking is your thing.
Yeah, by having money in the bank, and I understand totally because we've all been through it. We've got bills to pay. We've got pressures. We've got mortgages. We've got all that kind of stuff. But if you can start earning a certain amount of income, which means that you can take some of those responsibilities away, and which is one of the things I teach. Sorry, I'm going on too long.
No, I love this.
But people come to me and they go, David, I want to do what you're doing. And I say to them, the best way of doing what I'm doing is by doing something tiny. So I remember when I first started creating online income about 15 years ago, I've got several things operating, and one of them is still quite good, called whatsappfloridakeys.com, which was my first sort of passive income business. And it brings in, you know, thousands each month, you know, which is great. And I don't do anything with it. And I haven't looked at it for 4 years, but it still keeps on churning in.
Right.
And I remember sitting at my phone. I had a landline phone, which I've now got rid of. I have no phone at all. I realized I'd made £15 that month. And I looked at my phone, which was £15, and I thought, that's a free phone. That's free. I don't actually, somebody else is paying for that now.
Yeah.
And then I thought to myself, what about my mortgage? If I could get that paid, then that's you know, real pressure off. Let's do that. So I started building like these small income streams. And I think a lot of people come to entrepreneurship with the thought of going, well, I've got to build a business with 120 employees. And I always say to them, how much is your mobile phone? Let's work on making money for that mobile phone, because that will give you confidence that the process works. And then that will make you realize that you can break down the things that you're going out to work, and you become a kind of financial minimalist, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
It's not that you're having to get rid of things, which is what they say, you know, I'll get rid of that and you don't need it. I think there's a lot of things that it's nice to have.
Yeah.
You know, I like Netflix, you know, and I like the fact that as we've been traveling around hotel rooms, and there's nothing to watch on telly. And if you're listening, America, your TV is terrible.
It is. Sorry, America.
Yeah, it's beyond shocking.
Yep. RealityTV.com is what it is. Yeah.
It's either this is how to look beautiful or this is how to feed yourself. And if you do less of the feeding yourself, you're going to look better anyway. You know, so it works that way. But I won't ever get rid of Netflix because I love that.
Yeah.
But get somebody else to pay for it for you.
Right.
You know?
Right.
The Ginny Show. We tell you things we probably shouldn't.
Hi, this is Brooke Devard from Naked Beauty. Are you tired of feeling housebound? I sure am. Break free with the new Unbound Cordless Auto Curler from Conair. It's a high-performance auto curler that's rechargeable and gives you up to 60 minutes of cord-free runtime. Just think of all of the incredible hair looks you can create in 60 minutes, unbound, away from your wall. Don't get tied down by cords. Love your look. Live unbound. Check it out at conair.com and search unbound.
The Ginny Show. It's freaking hilarious, except when it's not.
So it's more so what you're talking about is not going in and being like, all right, I got to cut all these things out. Start with what's important to you, what you actually find non-negotiable. Netflix could be, you know, two meals out a week or something like that. And then as you work, build your businesses or build your streams of income, think of ways to get those paid for.
Yeah.
That's the attitude to go.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's great advice.
Yeah. And, you know, even, you know, when you start hosting a website and you're paying like podcasting, what's it, $50 a month or something with Libsyn or something like that, get somebody else to pay that. And I have a lot of people that come through to me wanting my coaching. And when I say to them the price, and it's not a lot of money really, they say, oh, I haven't got that money. And I go, no, you haven't. And you won't ever have that money because you're trying to pay for something out of what you've got. You're protecting the income you've already got. But what you've got to do is say, okay, I haven't got it. Somebody else has got it. Let's get it from them. And you could look at the crap you've got around your house and sell it on eBay.
Yeah.
You could, you know, mow lawns for people. It's all get rid of the ego.
Yeah.
You know, get rid of the ego, do what you need to do to get going. But then you buy the coaching and then you're 15 years ahead and, you know, you're up and running.
Yeah.
And I just see that. I see everything is tiny, bite-sized chunks. You do your emails on a Sunday morning. You don't do it anymore.
Yeah.
You do this somewhere else and you just build the breathing space. But once you start getting free things, this holiday hasn't cost me a penny because I've just whacked it on a credit card.
Yeah.
That's going to be non-interest for 3 years or something.
Yeah.
And by that time, somebody will come along and give me the money for it anyway.
Well, and you're going to work for that. Yeah. You're going to make that a priority.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
You know, and so that's how I operate. And it's freedom. It's freedom of mind. It's freedom of body. It's freedom of choice. It's quite easy to do.
Yeah.
I certainly couldn't come along and go, I'm going to create Apple.
Yeah.
You know, and I wouldn't want that.
Yeah.
I don't want employees.
Yeah.
But I do like the fact that I get a free this and a free that, and yeah. somebody else is chipping that away, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. That makes perfect sense. On that too, you off air we were talking about burnout and the signs of burnout. Yeah. And it seems like you got a very strong sense of self-awareness and what you want to achieve day in, day out. Even though you're structured, you may not have a to-do list, but you're very well aware of what you're all about. Talk to me about burnout and some of the early signs, because as an entrepreneur myself, I'm always stumbling through. I have a morning routine, but I don't always get it right. Yep. I'm always tweaking. And, you know, I don't ever say to my team members or anyone that I talk to that I do this all the time, because it's not true.
Yeah.
I'm human. I have human days where sometimes I get up and I'm like, I need an extra 2 hours. I'm not always like, I'm going to bounce out of bed, even though I'm quite bouncy, as you said. But one of the things I'm finding is that I'm constantly looking at how I'm investing my time, like so I can avoid things like burnout, how I can really get the quality of life and happiness that I'm trying to achieve. What do you look for? What are the early signs of burnout that you've found in your experience?
I think looking back on my own thing, looking rough, first of all,
yeah.
you know, when you're looking rough, that's quite obvious sign that you're not getting enough sleep and you're not resting. And so if you look in the mirror and you think, my God, I look like my dad, which I generally do, I was looking in my mirror and thinking, I look like his dad, you know, and that's how bad it was getting. But you kind of go away from that. And then I would look at things when you're not operating in the way that you normally would. I'll give you an example of this. Generally, I have no emotion.
Right.
I have happiness and I have sadness,
right?
But I have peaks of it, right. you know, and I can watch Toy Story 4, which I did recently, and it didn't affect me. I watched Toy Story 3. I couldn't come out of the cinema. I was like so choked up.
Aww,
you know, it was like peaks and troughs. I suddenly realized that I was feeling wobbly all the time.
Right.
And I would watch an advert and I'd go, blimey, where did that come from? You know?
Right.
And I felt that people were going at me all the time.
Yeah.
And I went out for a drink with my wife and two of our longest friends, and they sat there and they said, you know, oh, David, you don't look very good. You know, you know, we're worried about you. And I can look at it now and I can smile. And I should have thought to myself, well, that's nice of them to say that.
Yeah.
My response was kind of internally, okay, if I don't look very good, look at you, you know. When was the last time you saw a carrot? You know, I felt like people were at me all the time.
Right.
That's not me. That's right. not me. So if you are feeling very negative responses and you're feeling tired and you're feeling, as I say, wobbly and you feel like emotion, that's a big sign. That's a big sign that you can see it.
Like now, on edge.
You're on that edge. You're on that edge. Now, I went past that and then the physical things started coming out. So my hair started dropping out, and I used to have really thick hair, you know, which was great. It started falling out in clumps. Now, I'm not a vain person, or you don't think you're a vain person, but when something like that happens, you suddenly think, oh my God, you know.
I'm a vain person.
Yeah, I'm a vain person. So I went down to the doctors and he said, right, okay, we better do some tests. And so we did some tests and my cholesterol was like off the scale.
Wow.
My uric acid was off the scale. Everything inside me was boiling over, because what burnout is basically your battery running on overdrive. And I look back on it and I remember actually feeling like I was fizzing. It was like electricity through me, where I was so het up and so on edge and so, you know, just bubbling away inside, that your body starts changing and your body starts giving you symptoms. And with me, my head went really hot, really hot. And now I've read into it, it's a classic case. And I actually felt like, you know, I was sunburnt on the head. Right. And I kept going down to the doctors and stuff. Anyhow, when he did these tests, he said, look, you've got a choice. He said, you're actually 6 weeks from a heart attack or a stroke. So don't worry about your hair.
Yeah.
You know, this is it.
Yeah.
And I went, bloody hell. You know, I'm a young man here. Yeah. You know, I'm only in my 40s. I've got to do something about it. Now, to go from that to being cured, I'm still in it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm still in the program. People say, you know, okay, you live your life like this. And I say, yeah, I live my life like this because I got so far past where I should have been.
Yeah.
I needed to run it down. And so I had to start looking after what I eat. and I had to look at the packaging, and I had to start exercising each day, and I had to sleep more. And now my family, they laugh at it, but I will go to bed at 8 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
You know, and I say, there's nothing on telly, you know, I'm going to get me rest. And so I will go and sleep. But then I quite get up early in the morning because that's how my body is. So you've really got to look at, are there weird things happening in your body that you don't have? Are you feeling wobbly? Are you feeling negative emotions? Are you just feeling like that you're out of control? Before anything, and the big thing was gout. I don't know if you know anything about gout.
I've heard about it,
Gout is when you get so much acid in your body because your body, it forms on your joints.
Yeah.
And men get it and women get it. And they say, and women have told me this, so I'm going to take this as truth. They've said, I've had given birth and this was as painful.
Wow.
So where women always say to me, you don't know what it's like to give birth. I always say, yes, I do. Because I got it in my knee.
Ooh.
And I got it in my toes, and I had it for about 3 or 4 weeks. And literally, you're begging for amputation. Really, you are. It's so painful.
Wow.
Just a movement and a twist and stuff. Anything like that, before you get to that point, you've really got to say, this isn't me.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't me. But the simple thing is, do I look rough and tired?
That's the B of burnout.
That's the biggest one. That's obvious, isn't it, G?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you're looking in the mirror and you've got bags under your eyes and you know, you're thinking, actually, you know, I've been burning the candle both ends. That work's going to wait. You know, it doesn't matter. No one's going to thank you for sending an email to them at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Exactly.
You know?
One trick that I found with email management is that I actually schedule my emails to go out at the times that I say I'm checking them.
Yeah.
So even if I'm not checking them at 8, 12 and 5 that my email signature says, I schedule them so they go out at that time.
Yeah.
Because I've also found by doing that, I've gotten less emails.
Yeah.
But it's that anxiety of emails. I had that in my first year of building a business because I'm like, I need to get back to clients. I need to know I'm there for them. But at the end of the day, I was sacrificing my health and my time. And I did look at myself and like, seriously, Ginny, you used to be 25 pounds leaner. I wasn't 6 weeks away from a heart attack, but for me, like those triggers, they're so important because I don't think anything in your life is worth shortening your time on this earth.
I was in corporate land and a guy came up. He was sitting next to me and he was a scruffy guy, but he was a lovely guy. And the boss came up and we had a privately owned company that we worked for. So when the boss comes down, the boss, you know, you did what the boss wanted. And he came down and he said to Mike, he said, Mike, I sent you an email last night. And he said, yeah. And he said, I haven't had a response. And so he said, when did you send it? And he said, about 10:30 last night. And Mike said, and it's now, 8:15? And I'm at my desk. I'm not effing Barack Obama, you know. And
that's a great answer.
And it was a great answer. And it was a bit kind of, oh my God, he said that to the boss.
Yeah.
And then the boss went, okay, if you can have a look at it and get back to us. But I thought to myself, that's true. You know?
Yeah.
And that was one of those moments I thought, there's nothing. If somebody's drowning and they need me urgently, they're not going to send an email.
That's 100% true.
Yeah.
They're not going to send you
an email.
There's
nothing urgent in that. There's nothing. A Facebook message, Messenger, anything like that, no one is going to send you something if it's life or death.
Yep.
100%. It's just not. So 100%. Why do we prioritize that we need that? And there is that kind of addiction, and I'm past that, but I know what you're talking about, where you think, oh, I better check, I better look, you know, it's in you and you feel it and you feel a tenseness in your stomach because, you know, I haven't checked and somebody might have sent you a message. But all these devices like Facebook, I got told, and I tested this because I don't go on Facebook at all now. I don't do any social media other than what can sort of just be done automatically. And somebody said to me, do you realise with Facebook, when you log on in the morning, you've got like one message and you've got one sort of notification or something. You don't get like 30.
Yeah.
Because they know you're asleep. But what they do start doing is dripping it through the day to get you keep on coming back to it while you're awake.
Right.
And I thought, this is interesting. So I went off Facebook for 2 years, didn't send a single message. And then one day I thought, I'm going to test this. And so I sent a message and it was simply something along the lines of, hello, world. Hope you haven't forgotten me. Hope you're having a great time. Went viral. You know, it went viral. I was getting so many responses because it must have been that Facebook saw that I hadn't been doing anything.
Yeah.
Wanted to give me a boost of, oh, you know, this is what it's all about. I can get all this connectivity. But it just doesn't work.
Yeah.
You're just chasing those algorithms. You're chasing those likes and you're playing into somebody else's life. And I think that's what we're talking about all the time here, Jim.
Yeah.
The fact that every decision we make is normally not right for us.
Yeah.
It's right for somebody else, and it's right to make their life easier.
Absolutely.
And that's not what we should be doing. We should be making our family's life easier, our life easier, and everybody else goes down.
Absolutely. 100%. It's pure gold there, David. And I think that brings me to kind of the summarizing question of the Ginny Show, which I think you've answered in dribs and drabs over the
years. I want this to go on for hours. There's air conditioning in here.
There is. Tell me, David, what is your personal definition of happiness?
Family.
Yeah.
Yeah, family. My kids keep on saying to me, what's the best thing about this holiday? And I say, being with you. And they go, no, that's not, you know. And we've done Niagara Falls, and we've done the Empire State Building and Central Park and Lake Ontario. You know, we've done a load. And I say to them, no, it's being with you. And even when you are really miserable, and they've had moments when, you know, they're tired and stuff because they're traipsing around, it's still the best thing ever.
Yeah.
Because there's no other reason to be on earth, I don't think, than produce somebody you love with someone you love.
Yep.
And make their life as good as it can be.
Yeah.
And I actually feel a bit sort of choked up when I say that, because I think it's simple advice, but I don't think a lot of people
realize
say that.
No.
And they say, you know, oh, yeah, I should speak to my dad, but I haven't spoken to my dad for 2 years and all that kind of stuff, you know. And I try and see my mum and dad every couple of days, you know.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, they're 5 minutes up the road, but there's still that effort to do it.
Yeah.
Because I know, once again, they're not going to be here.
Forever.
Yeah.
No, they're not.
And I'm going to think to myself, why didn't I just, you know, do that? And I don't phone them. I go and see them and just sort of make sure they're all right and stuff, you know. So without a doubt, family makes me happy.
Right. That is happiness, and I 100% agree too. Mm. And I think I had a client the other day, and I mentioned this on another podcast, say to me that he was very upset that he said, I feel like I'm building this business and I don't get to spend time with my kids. I said, what do you want to do? He's like, I want to spend time with my kids. I said, well, why don't you hire people to run your business rather than hiring them to look after your kids? I didn't think of it that way, but it's interesting. Like, I find that fascinating that people are programmed in such a way that they prioritize building something. And sometimes you have to. It's a short-term goal to achieve long-term success. I get it. But it's like, just hire people to look after your business. Oh, I didn't think of that.
Yeah. Because there's a book I've read as well by Paul Jarvis. I can remember this one, called A Company of One.
A Company of One.
Yeah, A Company of One. And his basic whole manifesto is, why do we scale? Surely enough is enough, you know. And he said that he was building a business and he thought, well, I need to have this business. I need to have staff. I need to have office space. I need to have all this kind of stuff. And then he realized he was having to work to pay the salaries of his staff. And that's not what he wanted. And he said, I got into it thinking to myself, I want to be able to go to the gym in the afternoon and I want to go rowing on a lake in the morning. And so he started to look at it and said, you know, where is the scale point that isn't affected? You know, it comes into essentialism again. And I looked at that and I thought to myself, yeah. And my dad actually said to me once, probably about 3 years ago, and it sticks with me, how many meals do you need? And at that time, I was trying to get telephone numbers. And he said, you know, you paid your mortgage, that's being paid, and you're still chasing after the next thing. How many meals do you need?
Yeah.
And I thought about it and didn't really do much about it because I was in that kind of that churn.
Yeah.
But now I look at it and I think to myself, yeah, if I can have lovely holidays whenever I want, I can have the time freedom whenever I want.
Yeah.
Why do I need that next pavement, that next client?
Yeah.
That's not what I want anymore. And 100%. A lot of people don't accept that. And
no.
A lot of people say to me, yeah, but surely you want staff. Surely you want this. Surely you want that. And I say, no, I'm happy doing what I do because I've got that control to then turn it off.
Exactly.
And I'm not having to say, I need to be a podcaster. Elton John once said, one of the reasons they said to him, you know, why don't you retire? He said, it's all right for you to say, just retire. He said, there's a lot of people that their livelihoods are attached to me.
Yeah.
He said, you know, you don't realise that, but I have to pay for people to do it. And I thought, yeah, once you get into that stage, who's actually working?
Yeah.
Are you working or is your lifestyle working for you?
Exactly.
You know, and
exactly.
That's wrong.
Yeah, 100%. Well, David, you dropped so many gems, and I thank you for sharing time with me on The Ginny Show.
Thank you so much.
A lot to think about. I'm going to go back and read these books, Essentialism, and the other one that you said, The Company of One.
Yeah, good books.
They're great books, and they'll be in the resources on the show notes. But, David, tell the good people of The Ginny Show where we can find you when you are connected online.
Yeah, well, you can go to Google. Google's a good place because you can find lots of things on Google. Yeah. And if you type in joinup.com, then I will be there. And at the moment, we're bringing a load of coaching platforms in, teaching people how to start building income streams and stuff. Because I've realized now that I've gone past the what can I get? And now I'm about giving it back because I'm good. I'm happy.
Yeah.
And I want people to believe that they can do it. And I think the best way of doing it is by getting that phone paid, because then you can go, oh, it works. And you're not trying to get $30,000 a month. You're just trying to get $13 a month.
Yeah.
But then water that and make that $26, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's what I'm about at the moment. So we've got a lot of good stuff coming. Just Google Join Up Dots and I'll be there.
Fantastic. Well, that's David Rolfe, guys. Make sure you check him out. The Ginny Show.
This is Acast Recommends. Every week we pick one of our favorite shows, and this is one we think you're gonna love.
Let's get real. Have you ever wondered why adults are so obsessed with Disney? I'm theme park journalist Carly Wiesel, and on my new podcast, Very Amusing, I'm discussing every story, secret, and shenanigan I know to bring you an inside look at what's really going on there. From secret spaces like Disneyland's private $15,000 dinner to surprising celebrity hot takes, we're covering all of your curiosities. Subscribe to Very Amusing with Carly Wiesel now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast is home to the biggest podcasts from the U.S. and around the world. Subscribe to this show and hundreds more now via Acast or wherever you get your podcasts.